Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. Our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we've got a little bit of a pivot from the original scheduled podcast with Greg Brown, but we had a last-minute opportunity to do a podcast interview with Brett Broyle, who is the director of a new accelerator called TechStars Farm to Fork. They're working with Cargill and Ecolab to develop this lab or develop this program, and they're going to have their first class start this summer. Brett is actually, he came to Charlotte at the beginning of February, so I wanted to mix up my typical podcast with Brett and change things up. So we did the first part of the program prior to Brett coming to Charlotte. I wanted to get a little bit of an inside scoop about what the program was and what they're, you know, building towards. But I also wanted to get Brett's expectation about Charlotte from an entrepreneur kind of startup scene before he got here. The second part of the interview we'll actually do after Brett's left Charlotte. For obvious reasons, I want to get his actual experience here. What did he think? What was his feelings about it? What does he see as a strength? And maybe what are some of the, you know, challenges or things we need to work on? So we'll obviously continue to expand a little bit more on the Farm to Fork program in the second part as well. But a really good interview. We covered some great topics. Essentially, you know, what types of companies were they looking for? What's the program like with TechStars over 3 months? What's it like after the three-month program with TechStars? What is he really like in a founder's team? Maybe what are some of the similarities between Minneapolis and Charlotte from a startup perspective? So we cover a pretty broad range of topics. And again, I thought it went really well. Was very excited to have Brett on the program and certainly hope that you'll enjoy our interview with Brett here today. So listen in. All right. Well, welcome to the show today, Brett. We're really excited to have you join us and excited about having you come down here to Charlotte in the next couple of days as well.
Thanks, William. Really excited to be here, and I'm excited to be down there tomorrow, actually. It's going to be a good trip down. Get out of the real cold north here.
It's cold here, too, in our eyes. I think it's 35 today. So, but I'm sure you'll show up in flip-flops and shorts with that type of weather.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So, well, again, thanks for joining us. We mentioned it in the intro. You are leading I believe a new initiative with TechStars. So can you tell us a little bit about TechStars first? And then as we kind of leap off of that, can you give us a little bit more insight into the new initiative that you're working on there?
Yeah, no problem. So TechStars is the worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. I've been a part of a lot of startups and organizations and funds, and TechStars is the most mission-driven organization that I've been a part of, to be quite honest. And our goal really is to help entrepreneurs succeed. We started about 10 years ago with an accelerator program in Boulder, Colorado, and have grown tremendously ever since then. So we now have 39 accelerators across the globe in a variety of different verticals. The vertical that I work in is food tech and agriculture technology. But we also have a variety of other city programs that are vertical agnostic. But we also have, you know, our fintech program in partnership with Barclays. And in addition to our accelerator programs, we've actually expanded to have two other pillars of what is TechStars. And one is our startup program. So a lot of people have participated in a startup week or startup weekend. Mm-hmm. Those are actually TechStars programs. TechStars facilitates those programs, and it's we do it for free. It's just a way for us to help build stronger entrepreneurial ecosystems. We think it's good for everybody to build stronger ecosystems. So that's what we call our startup programs. Then we have our accelerator, which is kind of our middle branch. And then we have TechStars Ventures, which is we're on our fourth fund now. It's a venture capital fund that reinvests and follow on and invests into companies that come through the TechStars accelerator programs. So
on that note, do y'all only invest in companies that come through the program?
The newest TechStars Ventures is only going to invest in companies that come through our accelerator programs. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Sorry, I mean to butt in on you there.
No problem. Yeah. In prior ones, we did. In I'm not a part of Techstars Ventures either, but we have invested in mentor people that mentor for the program, their companies that they end up raising. Or if you've helped run a program, basically if you're associated with Techstars, we've invested in those companies as well in the past.
Okay. Fair enough. Makes sense. So how'd you get tied up with Techstars then?
It was kind of random, actually. I had in my last startup, I was an entrepreneur for a long time, and in my last startup, one of my investors was actually a part of Techstars, and we sold that company, and we were just getting ready to spin up Techstars Retail, which is in partnership with Target up in the Twin Cities, which is where I'm based. And basically, he's like, "Hey, Brett, you'll love this. You should help spin it up." And I started as an entrepreneur in residence. I was on the bench and said, "Sure, sounds like fun. Why not? Let's give it a shot." And it was actually, I was going to be a EIR, help spin this first program up. And while I was starting my next tech startup, I was going to start my next company while I was doing it. And I fell in love with Techstars and the organization and the investment side of the business during that process. And so that was how I got my into Techstars. Was just, it was going to be a short-term gig as an EIR helping run a new program while I started my next company.
Gotcha. So let's circle back around. I kind of jumped off the train a little bit, and I want to talk about, so your new initiative with Techstars is a farm to fork at Techstars.
Yep. So it's the Techstars Farm to Fork Accelerator. Yeah. We're working with Cargill and Ecolab on it.
What does that mean?
It's a good question. The term farm to fork is everybody uses it for something different right now. It's kind of catchy, which is why we used it for the name. But it's a food tech and ag tech accelerator. So it's our traditional accelerator program. It's the first program that we've ever run, first accelerator program we've ever run focused on the food value chain. And so it's pretty broad, really. We're not working with CPGs with this company, with this program. But it is anything from ag tech, so technology that makes farmers' lives easier, to supply chain, manufacturing, logistics, even food waste, what I call food commerce, which is anything from direct to consumer, like a lot of meal kits. Delivery is like a big new thing in relatively new thing in food commerce, but also how restaurants, are restaurants going to get disrupted, or they already are to some extent, right? What else is happening in the restaurant space? I actually really want to find a company that reinvents the mousetrap. Because part of like food safety is pest control, and the mousetrap has been the same for the last 1,000 years probably, and we have technology. We should be able to build a better mousetrap. But even like pest control, food safety is, 25% of the world's grain is contaminated by rodents right now. It's crazy. And so there's a lot of opportunity in this world. And so that's the program. And it's really exciting to work with people like Cargill and Ecolab. Cargill is just a huge company in food. They touch everything. Second largest privately held company in the world, I believe. But they touch everything in the food value chain. And Ecolab is so focused and really the leader in the world in food safety. And so we have a lot of expertise that we're going to be able to draw on for the program and really help provide some expertise and guidance to the companies that come through the accelerator.
Gotcha. So you've been there since 2016, right?
Yep. Been working with Techstars since 2016.
So has that whole time been with Farm to Fork, or?
The first 2 years was with Techstars Retail mostly. And so helping with the retail program. And I started working on putting this new program together earlier in 2007, early mid 2017.
Gotcha. So have you had a class yet in the Farm to Fork Accelerator?
Not yet. This will be our first, 2018.
Okay, awesome. So when does it start? How does it work? Tell me a little bit about the program.
Yeah, our cohort, the companies will actually be on the ground in July. So that we'll make our selection in probably by end of May. Okay. But right now applications are open. So like a lot of the other accelerator programs, we have a 3-month application window between now and April 8th. And I am traveling the US and Canada to, meet with startups meet with startups all over the US. We will recruit internationally. I bet I anticipate probably half our applications will be international for the program. But to meet with great entrepreneurs that are interested in building, amazing companies in this space. So how the program actually works is it's 3 months. First month, we do this thing called Mentor Madness, where all of our 10 companies, they'll end up meeting with 100 to 120 mentors. They do 10 meetings a day, 20 minute speed dates.
Wow.
And so it's a really quick way to expand your network. And that's one place where our corporate partners participate is their executives are going to be mentors for the program. So you get to meet really high level people at our organizations. Then we'll pull in subject matter experts from our partners as needed. But also it's the majority of our mentors are actually made up of entrepreneurs that have built companies and angels that are interested in investing and helping companies succeed. So you expand your network incredibly quickly in the first month of our program through Mentor Madness.
Now, hold on real quick on that. So first month is that are all of those meetings face to face or some of those done via computer or how does it work, Brett?
For our program, 99% of the meetings will be face to face for the Mentor Madness piece.
Wow.
Yep. And so it's crazy. It's exhausting. You get what we call mentor whiplash rule. You'll walk in one room and they'll tell you one thing. You walk in the next room, they tell you the exact opposite thing. And both of them sound right. And the entrepreneur is like, what the hell do I do?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a great way to learn and collect data points.
How do you coach them around that?
My line with entrepreneurs around that portion of it is that every conversation you have, everybody is going to give you feedback and give you their opinions. And I tell them it's data points. So think about just like anything else. It is their data points for your plot. And it's your company. You have to make the decision that you think is right. But don't go one direction just because one person said it. It's collect a lot of data, collect as much as you can, and then make an educated decision based on all of those data points. And so, and consider the sources too. Some people have more expertise in areas than others. And so, but I always try and remind our companies that they're just data points. Don't act immediately.
Yeah, no, got to take the emotion out of it, right?
Yep.
So first month is Mentor Madness. What's second month?
Second month, we really help try and connect some dots and start getting wins on the board. You take those relationships you've just built and you can do biz dev with it. Sometimes you're working on your product and finishing new features. But what wins can you get on the board? And really, the first month we say you're slowing down a little bit so you can speed up and go even faster after that. So that first month, you're slowing down, collecting a lot of data on your business and information. Then that next month, let's start executing on our new path or the same path, but execute even faster using this network that you now have. So what wins can we get, whether it's revenue, whether it's product, whether it's additional meetings with potential customers, so that let's get wins on the board. So that's the second month is really focused on execution. Third month, we help them. A lot of the companies that come through our program do end up fundraising at the end of our programs. Mm-hmm. And we really help with investor introductions. The TechStars portfolio has performed really well historically. And so investors tend to like it. And so we have the ability to make a lot of investor introductions, but we really do a lot of training on pitching and how to fundraise and how to talk intelligently about your company. And so we help them prepare for those investor meetings. And if you're not fundraising, that's okay too. We help with pitches for sales and just entrepreneurs are often terrible about talking about their companies.
Yeah.
It's really fun and interesting when I have my very first conversation with an entrepreneur, regardless of what their website says, when they tell me what they're doing, it might be something totally different than what I expect. And so we really try and help them with that messaging and learning how to talk about what they do.
Absolutely. So what happens after the end of the 3 months? You send them off into the world. Do they stay in contact? How does it work after the end of the 3 months, Brett?
Yeah, we release them to the wild. However, we have on TechStars has we your text once you're in TechStars, you're TechStars for life. But this is ongoing support forever. So we actually do a couple annual meetings. There's something called FounderCon where we get every TechStars founder ever is always invited to FounderCon, which is kind of like an unconference. We also do what we call Biz Dev Day there, where we actually bring in a lot of major corporations that are interested in meeting our portfolio companies. We've had about 1,500 companies go through our programs worldwide now. So we have a huge, pretty large portfolio.
Yeah.
And we also do an investor day annually where anybody that's ever come through, it's an opportunity to do, again, speed date with investors if you're want to build those relationships. And then we actually have a variety of central office people that help our portfolio companies. So we have people that work biz dev internally just to help our portfolio companies. So there's actually ongoing support forever. And at the program level, we stay in close contact with the companies that came through our program. You live and breathe these people for 3 months, and so you build incredible relationships. Sometimes, that live on forever, hopefully. So, I talk to the companies that went through our last two retail programs, some of them every day still. So you're often just trusted advisor. A lot of the mentors that you meet with through the program, they end up being advisors forever too, and lifelong relationships. It's just really neat. It's a really cool community.
Oh, it sounds like it. So you talk like somebody that's done the startup world before. So can you give us a little bit of your background too?
Yeah, I was an entrepreneur for a long time. That was always what I wanted to do. I was the kid in middle school that was selling king size candy bars out of his locker. I really did that.
That's awesome. And what was your most profitable candy bar? Do you remember?
I think it was Reese's, actually, like the king size Reese's.
Still always a big winner in this household, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest seller. So I've kind of always been a hustler, doing just those types of things. Once about 10 years ago, a little bit longer than 10 years ago now, I started my first real scalable company, built bootstrapped that one actually and sold it 4 years later, and then have done raised venture capital. I've done venture backed businesses as well. And I've actually been uniquely, I think, vertical agnostic with a lot of my companies. So I am the weird entrepreneur that is really, really passionate about entrepreneurship and not necessarily about the products that I've built, which is strange. I think a bit unique. So, I've seen like a market opportunity, built a company in that opportunity, regardless of how I felt about it. So, I've always believed in what we were doing. We had a good product, we had good people, but it wasn't, one of my companies, we sold medical uniform scrubs, for example. We just built a really cool digital way to do it. And I was not passionate about scrubs, medical scrubs, right?
Yeah, I would imagine it's hard to be, but maybe there are some passionate people about medical scrubs out there. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah. So, that's cool. So, you're coming to Charlotte tomorrow.
Yep.
You'll be here for, I would imagine, probably 24 hours or something like that. What are you coming to Charlotte for?
Yeah, I just think that North Carolina in general, but I think it's a bit of an untapped market, to be honest. There's even when I look within Techstars or where people are recruiting and where people are traveling to find great entrepreneurs, you see, people go to San Fran and New York and Chicago and actually I think Charlotte's very similar to Minneapolis in some ways, where I think that Minneapolis is a bit overlooked too, but there's a lot of really cool things going on, some great entrepreneurs here. And I actually originally kind of got turned on to the Charlotte market by Dan from Packard Place. He's a University of Minnesota grad, I believe, actually. And so he and I met several years ago. I was actually thinking about doing something similar to Packard Place in Minneapolis. And so he and I connected over that. Is how I got kind of my interest level. I'm actually also a Wake Forest grad.
Okay.
So I went to Wake Forest. So I know the region and area pretty well. So I thought it would be this. This is kind of a test, to be quite frank. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know what to expect, but I thought it would be an interesting city to come to, see what's going on. And I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think there was going to be value added, coming from it. I'm only traveling to 10 U.S. cities over the next 10 weeks, so it's one of 10. And so my hypothesis was that there's enough going on there where it's worth the trip to do. But we'll see. This is my first time doing it.
Okay. Well, awesome. We're fortunate to have you. Before I forget, because I've already forgotten twice, the website where people can find the information for you is?
You can just go to techstars.com and you can find a ton of information about Techstars, about our program. Ours is /farm-to-fork, but okay. you can find all of them at techstars.com, any of our things there.
So have you been to Charlotte before, Brett, or is this your first, or maybe you passed through the airport, but have you gotten outside of the airport before?
A little bit, but not for quite some time, actually. So it's been several years since I've been there.
Okay. So then you're our first experiment with this. What are your expectations for coming to Charlotte?
I think it'll be a very welcoming entrepreneurial community. So I think that there's going to be, there's just the communications I've had setting up the trip with people there. It's been very positive, very welcoming, and it feels like a supportive, place where entrepreneurs support each other, which is, again, very similar to what Minneapolis feels like, a smaller ecosystem where everybody knows each other. It's, you know, it's very easy to quickly navigate and get in touch with the right people. And so I think that that's actually kind of neat, and that's what makes opportunity for people like us that are coming to town that want to meet entrepreneurs.
So stay on that for a second, Brett. How old is – so Charlotte's entrepreneur ecosystem, I mean, a lot of people point at Avid Exchange or LendingTree and say, you know, startups date back forever here. But realistically speaking, our startup scene, you know, Dan bought Packer Place, I think, at the end of 2010. So call it 2012 before it kind of sort of got started up off the ground.
Yep.
There were some things in place before that, but I mean, really, it's 5 years old, right? So it's a really, really young scene. What's it like in Minneapolis? Is it pretty similar?
I think it's really similar. There's some, you know, what I call old guard companies up here that people point to and say, we've been the center of this for in med device. There is a strong med device ecosystem in the Twin Cities that's been going on for a long time. But if you think about the tech scene, it's really actually been the last 4 years for us. And there's a couple things that happened 4 years ago that you can point to and say, oh, that happened then, this happened. And we didn't have a Packard Place, but we did have a couple of organizations start about 4 years ago that have really helped bring all of this separate entrepreneurs and things going on together and start amplifying what we were doing and providing some of the support that entrepreneurs need to have a better chance at success. And we've had a few. We have a company called Sport Engine, which got bought out by NBC Universal. Another one called Jamf Software, which these are both last year that had really, really large exits in the Twin Cities. And so, but it, I mean, I would, when I first moved here from most recently Virginia, was in 2009. And I remember I was running a company. We're looking around and saying, where the heck are the other entrepreneurs? And there were none.
Yeah.
And it has changed drastically, specifically in the last 4 years now. It's really come to life.
Okay. So we have a running, I don't know if it's a running argument or whatever here in town, as far as what does it take to grow the entrepreneur system beyond where it is? Is it, and so I think I would agree. I'd be surprised if our two weren't really similar in stages where they are right now. Mm-hmm. Do you need more entrepreneurs or do you need more capital?
I believe that good entrepreneurs can get funded regardless of where they're at, where they sit. Having capital in an ecosystem never hurts. So if you can get entrepreneurs to move to your ecosystem because of capital, access to capital, that's why having capital in your region is good. So people move to San Fran because of a variety of reasons, but there's one big reason is there's a ton of capital there. Same with New York. Same with Boston and even Chicago in the Midwest. You have a ton of entrepreneurs that move to those ecosystems because they're close to capital and because they're close to other entrepreneurs. So I think that capital, but if you're a good entrepreneur, you can raise capital from anywhere is my belief. It's a little easier if you can just stay in your own town and raise it. But if you have to get on a plane, it's not that big of a deal. I think it's more the entrepreneur side where, I mean, what I really think helps an ecosystem take off is you have a LendingTree that exits, and then you have a lot of millionaires in town that want to start new companies and or fund companies, entrepreneurs. And we've seen that up here with Sport Engine, which exited last year. All of a sudden, there's 15 sports tech startups in the Twin Cities, and now we have this whole sports tech scene. We have a incubator that's called The Pitch, dedicated just to sports tech companies. Because we had that exit and these people are people that left Sport Engine. They made a little bit of money and just had all these ideas and started their new companies. And so it's amazing. We're kind of seeing that with one exit here.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's hard to make that happen, but those types of things are what can really take an ecosystem from to the next level, I believe.
I jokingly think that it won't be too long before all the startup community ecosystem is standing outside Mike Prager's house, and Mike's the CEO of Avid Exchange down here with, you know, billboards and signs and everything else to say, please IPO or something like that, right? Because I really feel like that's what everybody's waiting for is what you just exactly described.
It helps so much. I mean, it helps the scene so much. And, you know, it does like those two things. It adds entrepreneurs and capital to the ecosystem immediately, right? It adds the two things that an ecosystem really needs to, you know, so.
we'll see. I would imagine, you know, I guess everybody here is hoping for it to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, but that's out of everybody's hands except for, you know, those folks over at Avid. But so the program a little bit more and the tie-in with Cargill and Ecolab, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a movement over the course of the last, I don't know, probably 10 years or so, is that local, you know, buy local type produce stuff. Does their involvement help kind of build that up a little bit? Or is it more, I'm thinking I saw I think it was Bill Gates has funded a large startup that's a huge greenhouse that grows plants and stuff inside where it can be shipped anywhere. What direction do they want to take the program? Is it to continue to feed that local type stuff, or is it kind of location independent? It doesn't care. It really just wants to make the food chain better.
I think it's the latter. It's just we want to make the food value chain better, more efficient, reduce waste, more sustainable. How do we feed the growing population, right? There's all of the stats out there about how we're not at current, you know, food production levels. We're not going to be able to feed the world by 2050, right? And so it's that problem. How do we we're not making any more land, at least not in the next 20 years. We're not going to have more land. So how do we get more with less?
Yeah. Well, China keeps building islands, but outside of China, everybody else seems to have problems with it.
Yep.
So then in Charlotte, are you looking to partner with some of the universities, or where we, and just from that perspective, kind of your whole recruitment effort, are you looking to grab some folks out of universities that have specific skills, or is it just talented people with ideas that are starting to execute on them, and you want to pull those people, whether they're in universities or whether they're in a quote unquote garage down the street?
Yeah, universities can be a great source of entrepreneurs or startups for us, but we don't care if you're from a university or a garage down the street or working out of somebody else's office. It doesn't matter to us. Yeah. It really is, if you're a couple entrepreneurs just cranking on something that you think is, you know, world-changing, we want to talk to you. And honestly, even if it's not in my vertical, I'll talk to you anyways because I can direct you to the right vertical, right? Or a city program. So we look for great entrepreneurs and great teams. We want people that have an MVP done, and in place. We want you to have at least an MVP with hopefully some sort of market validation, whether it's users or pilots or some revenue. But, you know, our sweet spot really is those entrepreneurs that have maybe raised like a friends and family round, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, use that money to get that first thing built. And we help them take it to the next level and get them ready for that seed round or that A round. So we play pretty early, and we really just want to work with great teams. I mean, that's what it comes down to. We want awesome founders.
Yeah. So thank you for the perfect lead in. How do you define a perfect team?
So I do like, there's exceptions to everything I say. However, in general, we like multi-founder teams. I like multi-founder teams. And usually I like a team that has at least one tech founder and one business founder in general. So if you think about team dynamics, two people, I like diverse teams. So whether in any kind of diversity, whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's whatever, diverse teams are amazing. So I think diverse teams have a higher chance of success. So looking for diverse teams as well. And then when I start thinking about the qualities that make a team great, and at least a great fit for a TechStars program. What's a great fit for like an Excel or any accelerator, really? If you think about what we do, we provide a lot of mentorship. So that one thing that means is that, you know, the team has to be coachable. If you're not coachable, you're probably not going to get much out of our program. So we're looking for coachable people. You can be coachable, but not very smart. So you have to be smart, because if you're going to get all this advice, if you're not smart enough to execute on it or do things, then, you know, it's kind of wasted also. So we're looking for coachable people, we're looking for smart people. And it's a lot of work to build a startup. I don't care if you go through an accelerator or not. The hardest thing you'll do in your life is probably build a startup. It is tough. It's tough. It's lonely. It's hard work. Nobody gets it. And so you have to have an amazing work ethic. And then the fourth item that I always look for in founding teams is culture fit. So I mean, the Techstars Network is give first. We want to help entrepreneurs succeed, and we want entrepreneurs that come in with that mentality as well. It's not so you got to fit with, you got to fit culturally. So those are two things that are team dynamics, and then four things that are specific to the people in the team, I guess, that I look for. And I think if we check all those boxes, you know, you have potentially a great founding team.
So those, and we're wrapping up on time, and just so the audience knows, just a reminder, we're doing an interview with Brett before he lands here in Charlotte, and then after, so we can kind of get a flavor of his expectations before he got here, but also get some expectations and just generally continue the conversation afterwards. But some of those things that you just mentioned, like, it's really hard to put a pulse on it. So what's the interview process like for y'all in uncovering what you're looking for?
Yeah. And I miss y'all in Minnesota. I just don't get that up here. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, you're about to get it a lot. So I had to prep you for it.
I love it. I say it up here and people like it when I say it up here too.
That's funny.
It's really hard to do. And that's one reason that we travel. That's one reason I'm coming to Charlotte and going to these other cities, is to meet people face to face, look them in the eye, talk to them. It's really hard to do. And so through our interview process, you put an application in for our program, but really the magic happens when we interview you. And we actually, you know, it's January right now, or I guess it's the end of January. It's January right now. We don't make our selections until May. So we have months to track you and see what you get done. And so if you talk to me on the first time I meet me, you know, we meet and you say, I'm going to do this, this, and this next month, I am going to check in on you and say, did you do this, this, and this? And so you can start gauging some of those things just by watching them for several months. And I think that that's a lot of investors take that path also, where they enjoy meeting early and then watching the development and seeing how you act as a team. But there's still some, there's still some surprises when companies get into program where it's like, didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
But you know, we try and meet face to face with everybody. Sometimes with our international companies, that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a lot of video interviews. We do, we try and talk to you and watch you, and a lot of it comes down to gut. I mean, you meet somebody and you have a good gut feel about them. I think that's what actually made me a great entrepreneur I don't know if I was great. What made me a good entrepreneur was the people side of it, being able to gauge and take good bets on the people that worked with me and helped me build companies.
Well, we're excited to have you down here in Charlotte tomorrow. And I'm excited to kind of circle back around with you and do follow-up conversation and talk about similarities and differences between your city and ours, and what you did and how you did and everything else. So thanks for carving out some initial time for me. Before I let you go, since the Super Bowl is this Sunday and it's near you, I've got to ask, Eagles or Patriots?
I am rooting for the Eagles since they destroyed the Vikings, who I was rooting for. So I'd like to see the Eagles win, because I'm tired of the evil empire, which is what I am calling the Patriots now. So I'm cheering for the Eagles.
Well, remember that the Patriots cheated us out of a Super Bowl back in 2004. So you're coming to a city that is also rooting against them. So go Eagles.
Yeah, go Eagles.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Brett. I appreciate it. Safe travels, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thanks, man. See you tomorrow.
Much like with the other entrepreneurs that we've interviewed here on the Charlotte Angel Connection, you can just pick up the energy from Brett, very enthusiastic, for a company or a team that's going through his or the accelerator program, the Farm to Fork accelerator program that he's running. You can tell they'll benefit greatly from his enthusiasm, his energy, his experience, and everything else. So it was a really cool interview with Brett. It'll be interesting once he gets here, if he continues to see the similarities between Minneapolis and Charlotte. Also be interesting to get some of the feedback that he had just being here for 24 hours as well. So great little interview. Again, I'm looking forward to part two. I don't know what direction it'll end up in, because we've actually yet to record it. We have this recording tomorrow. So but please stay tuned with us for next week for another edition of the Charlotte Angel Connection with Brett Broyle. Thanks so much.
William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments described herein may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interests may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, Paragraph 51, Line A, under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interests. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.